Yes, sir, Dieter and Jake, coming to you on a Tuesday night. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're staying warm if you're in the Bay Area. Not that it's that bad relative to, like, I don't know, winter everywhere else, but...
About to be in Buffalo, New York.
It's a good night for stew.
It is stew weather.
It is stew weather. It's all falling apart, Jake. Now, this isn't news to us because we've been seeing the writing on the wall for more than a minute now. I mean, months. But we're at the point where something that I say on KMBR turns into a whole thing. That's not good. That's not a good look for anybody. I mean, I guess I'm the winner of all of that, and that can't be what anyone wanted out of this situation.
Well, so you're literally wearing it.
We have to get rid of Griffin in the comments here saying Rock Chalk Jayhawk. We don't have any of that kind around here. But welcome to the show, Griffin. So let's quickly summarize here. I was on KMBR yesterday. By the way, if you haven't listened to Jake already, he's been hosting 2-6 on The Game this week. And not going to get in trouble for saying this. I think he's been doing a really good job. So you can check him out tomorrow. Jake and I are going head-to-head tomorrow from 2-6.
That's
so
right.
Get two radios and listen to them simultaneously. I was asked about Deebo Samuel not talking to the media after Sunday's game. And we've talked about it a little bit. And I just, it's obviously a bad look for someone who wears one of these, though a little bit more embroidered, for the captain of the team after they get their teeth kicked in on national television, forcing Tom Brady to go out there and, I don't know about that one, KB, go out there and bloviate in Green Bay, Wisconsin. He had to get on his private jet to go to Green Bay, Wisconsin. And you go and you get your teeth kicked in. Just an embarrassing performance. You, Deebo Samuel in this case, goes 1-for-4, the only one coming off of a double reverse screen in which he missed a touchdown on the play. Because he didn't allow the blocking to develop.
He cut it inside, and you watched Jake Brendel's reaction to that one, and if he was a little bit more patient and cut it back outside, it's close to a touchdown for sure. But brutal. Go on.
It's brutal. And I suggested that I'm not interested in seeing somebody who is picking fights with the long snapper and kicker, so punching down, and then not standing up and talking to the media when they're asking, right? Like, not like going in front, like, I'll go to the podium, I'll be the guy. You're asked for a quote after the game, after you guys got your teeth kicked in, and you refuse to do it. I'm sorry, that's not leadership. That's not leadership. We do a bad podcast, and for some weird reason, someone wants to come up and ask, hey, what the hell happened there? You and I are both going to stand up and give a quote. I give a bad column. I got to stand up and be accountable. Okay? You wear a C on your chest. You need to be the captain of the team. And that ultimately requires you to stand up and speak for the team in situations like Sunday. So I'm not terribly interested in Deebo Samuel continuing to wear a C on his chest for the San Francisco 49ers, a football team that's been around a lot longer than he has and will be around a lot longer than he will be. I'm not interested in him wearing that C and not holding up the responsibilities, whether he wants them or not. He could decline the C. So that's the bit. I'm doubling down on the statement because ultimately, you know, he's on his podcast. He forced me to listen to his podcast at least for, you know, a minute. And, you know, at the end of the day, he hasn't held up his end of the bargain. The 49ers are a worse team for that. And while he is by no means the biggest problem going down with San Francisco right now, the fact that he can't come out and talk to the media, which is, in essence, standing up and taking accountability to the fan base, the fact that he can't do that, but he can go and get softball questions from Bleacher Report over here on Tuesday is embarrassing. And the fact that he's not embarrassed tells you everything you need to know about what he thinks about leadership. And frankly, if I'm the other captains on the team, I'm not sticking around and figuring out when he figures it out. I'm not waiting for that to all go down. That's just one man's opinion. It doesn't really matter because this season ain't going anywhere. So who cares who's wearing the C?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're not going to strip him of his captaincy because it would be funny to do it, but they're not going to do that. They're not going to strip him of it just because, you know, we don't think he handled himself appropriately.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I've been hosting with Loneal, and it's like, as a, you wonder what a former player thinks. And he's like,
yeah,
it's not mature. Like, he's like, the amount of times he's like, I was playing in Cincinnati and we were terrible and I had to answer terrible questions, and you stand up and you deal with it. Like, that's literally what leadership is. And I know media people, we tend to blow up our own spot, our own importance, but it is quite literally a responsibility to just say anything to the media. You can tell us to go screw ourselves, whatever you want to do.
No comments, get yourself screwed. Yeah,
like whatever. These people, like media people also, like, that are at the game, they flew out there. This is their job. Like, respect their job to go out and do it and be like, Debo, what did you think? And he can say no. That's his right. But it is just, if you're going, it's, if he's any other player, it's fine. Whatever. It's not a good look. But if you're a captain and you are this, like, representative of what the 49ers are supposed to be, and that's what it means, it's just, there's no way. After the Moody thing and telling, you know, your long snap or telling your kicker to lock in and then getting in a fight with your long snapper after that to do this in a bad loss. Again, it's not going to really matter to them in-house. I get that, but it's not a good look for a captain.
Shouldn't it matter in-house? Shouldn't this team call that out? Not about the media stuff or anything, just about, like, what are we doing here? What how about you lock in, Debo? Because frankly, where has he been? He's not playing well. The team's not playing well. Everybody has to wear that. But this is a guy wearing a seat. Can you imagine a world in which Fred Warner wouldn't answer questions? I'll even take it one step further. D'Amador Lenore's not wearing a seat. He stands up after they lose. He answers questions. I'm not asking anyone to go in there and be eloquent. I'm not asking anybody to go in there and present the answers. And I'm not saying that we want to do some gotcha journalism BS. None of this, right? Like, you're right. There's a lot of bloviation and self-aggrandizing and all this stuff. I get that. These are the basic responsibilities of the C, and it doesn't shock me at all that this team can't seem to find that gear that they believe is in the back of their minds when one of the guys who is unquestionably one of the best players in the NFL the prior 3-4 years, unquestionably former offensive player of the year in the league, 2021 is as good as it gets. No one can knock the record. No one can, but I can knock the current performance.
Right. It's also just unfair to your teammates. Like, from the perspective of everybody else has to stand up there and answer questions from the media. Nobody wants to do that. No one's in a comfortable situation.
That's what the money's
so
for.
Like, right. It's just, I don't know. I'm interested if that did rub his teammates the wrong way. And maybe he's been around so long they don't care and it's whatever. But I would think that's something you would like someone to say, hey, you know, can you at the very least just give them some bad answers and say, yeah, we played bad. Keep it short. It doesn't matter. And again, we're...
Be a leader. Sure.
Maybe we're blowing this whole thing out of proportion, but it is, you are a captain. Just do the bare minimum.
Be a leader. Be the face of the franchise. Go out there. Do your job. George Kittle would have never skipped out. Fred Warner would have never skipped out. Eric Armstead would have never skipped out. A lot of people talk about, okay, this team's going to figure it out because they have such great veteran leadership. I think there is a lot of very good leaders on this team who are feeling it. Fred is feeling some type of way right now, right? George is out here doing wellness checks on Kyle Shanahan. But man, this is one of the guys. And I know that he leads the team out of the tunnel, but Trent Williams would have, you know, stood in that locker. Trent Williams could pick up and kill any single one of us, including me.
Quite easily.
Could kill them. He could. He would stand up and be accountable for a loss after that game. That was just an abysmal.
Yeah.
Football game, and I'm not sure Brock Purdy would have even helped had he played.
Yeah, and I think fundamentally going forward, the thing of, okay, yeah, they're technically a game back. Can they turn it around? The offensive line's not going to change. I mean, Trent can come back, but Jalen Moore wasn't actually a huge problem for them in that game. It was the center and left guard.
Yeah,
that was the problem, and that's not
Jalen Moore might have been their second best offensive player in that game, beyond Kittle.
Well, I guess you might get Spencer Burford in there because Banks, I think, right? He's dealing with a concussion. So
yeah,
you've got that. The only bright side they have is if this game in Buffalo is in the snow and it's a total mess, and then you just get a toss-up of a game against maybe the best team in the NFL. That said, I think Josh Allen is like the last quarterback you want to face in the snow.
What do you mean I can't pass? Oh, so I get to go full juggernaut on you guys for the next 60 minutes?
He's a moose. He's just a moose. He's a moose running around. It's a little bit like John Mulaney's horse in the hospital bit, except it's a moose in a snow game. And how are you going to tackle a moose in the snow, folks?
This is a mess, and I'm fascinated to see what the other side of this looks like. Obviously, the context of what happens on Sunday is big. Brock Purdy, latest news from Kyle yesterday was that he did some light throwing, that he felt fine, but we're basically in the same spot we were last week. So he's had two MRIs now. Doesn't seem as if they know what the injury is. That's kind of concerning because clearly it's enough that Brock Purdy, unquestioned tough guy. Like Brock Purdy's been out there playing with a broken rib. Brock Purdy's out there. And so
it gets into a situation where they lose this one, which is expected. Maybe the weather plays a factor in that. Maybe they pull something out. I very, 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 very much doubt it.
They're 7-point dogs.
Sure, anything's possible, snow game, unpredictable. But it gets to a point where you lose this, and you've been in these deep playoff runs, you start getting into, do we just sit some of these guys? Do we just call it? And I think because of the NFC West and because they will technically be in it, like I think Seattle could like lose to the Jets in a really stupid game.
No, there's literally no scenario that you can throw my way about the NFC West that isn't plausible in my mind. Like every team losing every game other than the ones they have to play against each other, totally plausible. The Seattle Seahawks turning into an absolute juggernaut, winning every game by 1 point, completely possible.
Sure.
Arizona just rare. It is a bad division. Some people have an expensive bad car and some people have a cheap bad car, right? Some people are out here still rocking like a Saturn. I saw a Saturn. Listen,
I've got a Mazda that's just been paid off, and I am gonna run that thing out of the ground.
I got a 2007 Honda CRV. It exists for one express purpose: put the Christmas tree on top after Thanksgiving. Like that's why that car is there to be stolen. That car is there to put moose in the back of it. That's my giant golden retriever.
Not Josh Allen. Dogs.
But like like rookie year Josh Allen, where he doesn't know what he's doing at any point. That car, you have to have a beater car, and then you can have like your nice car if you're in a two car household, such as my life. But I saw like a Saturn on the road, and I was just like, hell yeah, brother. Like that's like a 1999 Saturn, and you're still driving it. Looks like it's fine. There was a cat in the back window. It was alive. Nice. It was a living cat. And I'm like, hell yeah, brother, you got it. And then there's also somebody who's out here in, you know, the $900 a month Mercedes SUV. And you go, actually, that's not a good car. Like it's got the brand, but it's actually a lemon. They're all lemons. There's some people who have a really nice car. That's a piece of junk. There's some people that have an actual piece of junk. I lost the point of the analogy, but you know where I'm going.
Yeah, the point is, this is a team where there's been so much invested, and I think you lose this game. It's not quite over; like they're not throwing in the towel yet. But you lose this game, Seattle wins. You found the analogy somewhere in the abyss that you dug yourself into.
So the NFC South is the Saturn. And the NFC West is the really fancy car that's actually a dud. Because you look at the 49ers and the Seahawks, and I know that not all of them came in with serious expectations, but there's a lot of prestige and not a lot of good football in the NFC West right now. Right? Right. Super Bowl champion Rams with McVay. You know, the Seahawks coming, you know, the Seahawks have been consistently feisty. The Cardinals, oh, everyone wanted to buy into the Cardinals. You know, hot. Here we go. Kyler's going to do it. They're hot to go. Meanwhile, everyone looks at the NFC.
H-O-T-T-O-G-O.
Thank you.
I believe.
Thank you. Meanwhile, everyone looks at the NFC South and goes, oh, they suck. Pretty much the exact same thing. Just the same exact thing. And at least they're honest about who they are. So that was the analogy. Yeah. I'm ruining this.
I mean, if you want to game this thing out, like if you want to be the most optimistic and just let's assume they lose to the Bills, because unless something wild happens, I'd be stunned if they beat them.
Would love to see something wild happen.
Then you have down the stretch, you've got five games. You have to win all of them, right? You have to win all of them. You're not going to get in at 9-8. So it's the Bears at home, toss up. Bears aren't a good team, but they're unpredictable. They've got some guys. Whatever, this 49ers team isn't a good team. Rams, toss-up. Dolphins, toss-up. Yeah, Rams on Thursday night.
At Miami.
Tough game. Dolphins are still kind of going to probably be in it and fighting for their lives. Lions, you got to hope that the Lions have nothing to play for, but they will. And yeah, I can't.
That division's too good. Like they're going to keep getting pressed by Minnesota. They're going to keep getting pressed by Green Bay, and ultimately the Eagles are playing such good football that they're probably being pressed there too for the one seed. And if the Lions won anything, it's home field advantage. That's a big deal playing in a dome in Detroit.
And then you end with the Arizona Cardinals on the road. Just not a single one of these games is easy. And this is a bad team. The 49ers are a bad team. Listen, is it possible they run the table after they lose to the Bills? Sure. Maybe. Anything's possible.
It's so wildly improbable given the level of play they've put on the field. Okay, like even if we wanted to pretend as if the Green Bay loss in which you got your ass kicked by 28 games or 28 points, even if you want to pretend as if that was solely the quarterback and Brock will be back. Of course, it's the exact opposite. In fact, Brandon Allen might have been a bright spot in the game comparatively.
Brandon Allen, I thought, did some really good things. He had that horrible throw in the first half. You know, he slipped a couple times, but I thought he was really good. He threw a dart to Kittle on a skinny post, and then he threw a back shoulder one to him. It's the problem, and the reason I can't possibly see this team winning out after losing to the Bills, which is basically
it's
the scenario.
A ridiculous sentence. How do you even not laugh coming out of your mouth?
Yeah, but this is even for the most optimistic 49ers fan who says, okay, these are all winnable games. Sure, yeah. Theoretically. The problem is your center has not been good. Your left guard, who's been bad, has a concussion. And I guess you go to Spencer Burford now if Banks doesn't come out of that. Those two guys have struggled. You're getting no push. And even in key situations, you're getting a hold, you're getting a failed block. And then on third downs, just schematically, you're doing this thing where teams are pressing you at the line of scrimmage and they're overloading you on one side and making you throw hot. And when you throw hot, more often than not, you get a throw that's short of the sticks if it's not like a third and two, third and three, third and four, even third and five. Beyond that, so you've got so many functional problems on the offense. And defensively, you don't have the guys at defensive tackle. I asked Greg Cosell about the wide nine today, and he's like, you know, I think the thing is coaches, even if that is the answer, even if changing it is the answer, coaches have a really hard time changing something that's worked. So I think that's something that they would assess in the offseason. But even if you did have great defensive tackles, your scheme is questionable. And you don't have great defensive tackles against the run. You just don't have the guys. You don't really have the scheme to fill it. And you're asking too much of your linebackers. And Fred Warner, you know, he's not playing his best. He's still playing well, but he's getting targeted every single game by linemen climbing to the second level. They just go right at him. They're using motions.
He doesn't stand a chance.
There's so much that's going against them that it's really difficult for me to see a way where they would win five straight And I think the better case scenario is for them not to.
Yes, yes. I don't want to go down that road until they get absolutely curb stomped in Buffalo, which I'm not sure is going to happen. But if it does happen, then we can have the conversation about what's best for the team. The idea that they should just, oh, play the young guys. Buddy, they're already playing the young guys. Oh, where are these other young guys? Nugent?
Garendo?
Howing? Garendo? Okay, great. Get them in there with the rest of the young guys. They have a secondary that's all baby children, right? Oh, D. Winters gets more snaps? They've been thinking about, do we play D. Winters every day since week one? They have decided not to. At a certain point, they've decided against it so many times in a row, I got to give them some benefit of the doubt. Because anyone else would have made this move after 3 weeks. Because they don't know Devondre Campbell shit. He hasn't played for them before. He hasn't done anything. They don't owe him a damn thing. So the idea that they keep saying, we just can't do it. We cannot do it with Winters. I got to think that they know something that we don't know. I kind of get it. You made a really interesting point. I mean, we've gone into what happens on third downs for the 49ers ad nauseum. If anyone has been with us to this point, it is the only thing it seems like we talk about. The game planning defensively is so easy. You overblow blitz to one side. It forces the 49ers, who don't slide protections, to throwing to a hot route. That hot route doesn't have time to develop anything down the field. It's almost always going to be short of the sticks. You get off the field early on third down. Really straightforward stuff. The Niners have not adjusted at all in that capacity. Even if they've looked a little bit better in protection, they have not actually fundamentally adjusted how they handle third down overload blitzes. Everybody in the league knows what's going on. Everyone in the league is doing it. Doesn't matter if they're good or not. It's working because they do not change the fundamentals of Kyle's offense. Here's the stat for you. They converted one third and long in that game against Green Bay. Okay, that's not new. They've sucked at third and long all year for the reason that I just laid out. That was the Christian McCaffrey pick route that he stacked up behind Kittle. Now, we'll probably throw it in film room here, which is a separate video we'll premiere tomorrow morning. But on that play, they flex McCaffrey out to the right. It's third and seven. This is in the second quarter, third and seven. They are down 17-0. So it's already looking great. Flex McCaffrey out to the right. And then you have a stack. The safety, in this case, it was 25.
Was it McKinney or Evan Williams?
McKinney, yeah. It doesn't matter. They have two great safeties. Either one of them is a tough matchup for any running back, least of all Christian McCaffrey, and yet still. So McCaffrey stacked behind Kittle, who split out wide. And Kittle just straight up double blocks. He doesn't even bother running a route. He just runs a straight run block. Totally illegal. The flag should have been instantaneous. They never called it. Kittle sold it like a madman. What a football player. McCaffrey runs his 7 yards. Actually, he only ran about six. He's short of the sticks. He gets it, and he's able to turn it upfield because Kittle had blocked so much. That is the same play, it should be noted, that they ran. They flipped it on the 4th and 2, which was apparently a bone of contention, as if the Niners had a chance to win this game.
Right.
But on 4th and 2, they run the exact same play, but it's not Kittle on the left side. So they did it on the right side on 3rd and 7, the only third and long conversion they had in this game, the only one I can remember in a minute now. They flip it on 4th and 2.
Yeah.
On 4th and 2, they flip it from the right side to the left side. So it's now Jennings as the player that McCaffrey's on the ass of, who they stack behind him. Jennings just runs his route. So now
he,
you
listen, I do. He
and
did
I can't
try.
Blame him. He was open.
He did. Jennings did try to run the pick, but he didn't. I think he went, well, he thinks he's probably going to get penalized, I think, if he runs through McKinney's face.
He should be penalized if he runs through McKinney's face.
But he still probably should have done it.
Yeah.
And they don't get the pick. And Allen, you know, I don't really blame him for just.
That's his one. That's the route.
Just
the play was
deciding
for McCaffrey to be open.
But McKinney is a stud, goes outside leverage and just clamps him. And there's nowhere really for the ball to go. If he looked right, you know, you could make an argument if you want to get totally galaxy brained about this, that if you bump motion McCaffrey to the left, you know, of Brandon Allen, then you get a different depth where you could look right. where Kittle and Pearsall put, it's either the safety or the corner, and they put him in conflict, and Pearsall comes open. And then if that's not there, you can quickly go back to McCaffrey because he's running at a different depth where there's more time to get to the route. This is all getting galaxy brained, and because it doesn't really matter. It's just saying
backup quarterback in his fourth and second, maybe just throw the ball.
Right. And one other thing Cosell talked about is they were as simplistic as they've ever been with their motions and their offense because it is a backup quarterback who hasn't played in 2 years, which I think is a pretty reasonable thing to do. But that's just what happens. You try it and go for it on fourth and two, and it's a similar play. You don't get the pick, and you don't get the conversion.
Yeah. I will say, did we go in on this extensively on Sunday, the 12 men on the field back-to-back?
I cannot remember. I've talked about it so much this week. I can't remember if we talked about it, but happy to talk about it again.
I've been looking for the sign, right? I've consistently been saying, like, I need a sign. I need something big and cosmic and just obvious about Nick Sorensen's, because I can't tell. Obviously, he doesn't have the personnel that to make a really good defense here. Doesn't have the defensive line. So, like, how can you have a... I don't think you can have a great offense if you don't have a great offensive line. I don't think you can have a great defense if you don't have a great defensive line. Call me old-fashioned. So, he got handed kind of a shitty deck of cards here. And I'm not arguing that he's doing a good job, but I also couldn't go in on him for doing a bad job. Then I saw them have 12 men on the field on back-to-back plays, and like I'm not sure how anyone could possibly defend the work that he's doing. Like, I mean, the one thing I thought he was organized.
Kyle Shanahan didn't defend it. He went, yeah. So they kind of the refs screwed us over on
the first one. They did screw him.
Yes, they did. They got screwed over on the first one. Then he goes to the second one. He's like, I'm busy screaming at the referees, which is fair.
Kyle takes his eyes off the field for 1 minute and he leaves someone else to do their job and they can't do it. The same thing that happened with Wilkes.
The only thing you should be doing after getting a 12 men on the field penalty is immediately counting and seeing how many do we have on the field. Let's check our personnel. They tried to do it again. The refs gave them enough time for the substitution. They went, no, we're actually good with 12. We're fine with 12. This is a
we're right. You're wrong.
This is actually a good. This is a tactical. This is a strategic move for us, and we're gonna stick with it. So it's indefensible. That's something that it's not a fireable offense. But when you're not, you haven't shown promise in other areas. Like, there are a lot of young coordinators out there that are doing cool things. And I think Sorensen is in a tough spot where the 49ers defense is flawed in a lot of ways. And I don't think Kyle wants them to experiment too much. Correct. I think their identity is to trust the defensive line to get home and be simple. Mm-hmm. That is another thing, like the wide nine, that should be examined in the offseason. I think wholesale changes may be coming. We can discuss what wholesale means. But it's something where you're asked to sort of keep it simple, and it's a tough assignment. And yet, if you can't get the substitutions right in that situation, that is something that's pretty damning.
They're going to have a ton of draft picks, like 11, 12, 13. This is a great defensive line draft. It's a good offensive line draft. As far as I can tell, we haven't gotten into it in any serious capacity yet. But defensive line, it's pretty obvious from the jump. Like, holy shit. Like, what a defensive line draft.
If only someone could have predicted that defensive tackle would be a problematic position for the San Francisco 49ers.
I mean, listen, Debo listens to the show. So, you know, he could have been a captain and taken this to Kyle and said, like, I think we got a problem because Dieter and Jake are on it. But,
what was it? When were OTAs in May?
May.
We said this was going to be a problem?
Yeah. Yeah. But Jordan Elliott was their best run defender against Green Bay. Kyle said that out loud.
And here's the thing. He might be right.
Really?
Probably not. No, it's probably Evan Anderson. And I'm not impressed with him.
That's damning.
They don't have a good interior run defender. They just simply don't.
Malik Collins is like kung fu fighting in there. It's kind of fun to watch sometimes.
He's doing cool shit and also getting gapped into oblivion. What the Packers did immediately is say, okay, you're gonna attack our outside shoulder and shoot up field. Wonderful. That is exactly what we want you to do. Keep on doing it. And then when you go back to trying to hold up in the gap, you can't. You just don't have the dudes to do it anyway. So
it was legitimately, this is the singular game where I'm like, wow, they got worked over tactically. Again, Chiefs, it wouldn't.
Chiefs was also just, we knew what rough, it was going to be.
But you knew what was coming. Maybe it's just the element of surprise with Green Bay, because they ran some stuff, like literally ran it, like in the running game, that I've never seen motion to counter. Like, it sounds simplistic. Like, that was wild. There was some wild stuff that they were running.
They honestly ran one play three times.
It was like elevated Debo in his prime, what they were doing. Like, this should have been what Debo and Christian McCaffrey looked like together if Debo still had the juice at the time that they got Christian McCaffrey.
The timing on those blocks, and also Jacobs running so aggressively through tight holes that just... they just had enough space, but he knew he is cooking. Like, he is a problem.
He's
also seeing so many dynamic running backs, like him and Saquon. Just
wow.
Let's see that in the playoffs. Love to see that.
That'd be a hell of a matchup. I mean, that's the weird part. We have been so lucky to be at the vanguard of cool shit in the NFL for the last half decade, right? More than that. Where you just go, wow, this is really fun stuff. And every year it kind of gets more interesting and you get these super fun and engaging tactical battles. And now they're just not even part of that ball game anymore.
Have the 49ers played a single game this season that's made anybody feel good? like as a fan.
Jets.
Like, I'm what? Okay.
Jets. I mean Jets. No one should have felt good after New England. I know you had just gotten off the plane. You were jet lagged, so you weren't going to feel good. But like, the New England game felt like they won, and they won handily. And it
was
felt
like,
weird. There was a weirdness.
It didn't feel great.
It felt like they got away with something a little bit, even though it was never in doubt.
The Cowboys
Seattle
game
had the same energy.
Totally. The Seattle game had the same energy. Thursday night game, you go, all right, well, important win, whatever. We got through it. Great. The Cowboys game, they played the greatest quarter they've played all season, and then in the fourth they said, let's be the Golden State Warriors and just come at us and do what you want to do, because we're ready. I mean, for you to destroy us.
There's something to be said. I a lot of people have made the Warriors comparison, but the Warriors exploded. Like, it wasn't this decline. Like, we didn't have to. This is a lot more forever Giants energy, where it's just players that were, and in the case of the Giants, they were never of the caliber that maybe these Niners superstars were, but they certainly had they won three titles, so that's more than any of these Niners could say. But ultimately, it's this slow fade, and you're just the frog in the boiling pot of water, just slowly cut. Like, at some point you realize, like, oh boy, they're cooked, it's over. And I guess we could have known that based on the fact that Christian McCaffrey went for the cash grab before the season started. Like, I got to get it now. And Debo Samuel's like, hell yeah, I'll restructure my contract. Like, there's the signs were there. We talked about it. They had a hell of a run. It sucks that they didn't win a title, because they were, outside of Kansas City, the second best team. And anybody in football would have traded places with them in a second. But they just pushed it 1 year too far. And hindsight being 2020 now, like, obviously they pushed it one year too far. It felt when they were trying to trade both Debo and Ayuk this past offseason. This was before the late summer Ayuk
and asking insane price tags for them.
Correct. But when they were trying to trade both of them, trying to trade Debo for a first and Ayuk for two firsts. That's your hint. If you're considering trading these guys, even for an absurd price, now you know, hey, we got to shuffle the deck here a little bit. We got to mix it up. Because frankly, the only shift that you had was, oh, we're going to cut Eric Armstead, who we got on Armstead a lot. I was never that impressed with him. But what they wouldn't do for an Eric Armstead right now, at least no he question. Can hold the gap every now and again, unlike anybody on this team.
I'm with you. I need to ask you a really pressing question, and that is, yes, who's your favorite forever Giant? Sorry, hashtag forever Giant.
Evan Longoria.
Ooh, that's a really good one.
That's layered. Bobby Evans is back. I don't know why everyone's so down on the Giants. I mean, Blake Snell signs with the Dodgers today. Bobby Evans is back. That seems like a good trade for me.
You know what's awesome? First of all, mine is John Brebbia, I think.
Wonderful.
Brebs. Alex Dickerson was in the mix too.
Meant so much to be at the Cheesecake Shop.
He was awesome, and then some certain people online took the joke too far and ruined it for everybody.
Never.
The Giants, you know what's awesome? Is it's not that the Giants just let Blake Snell go. It's that they were so Farhan was so snarky and at the trade deadline, and they're like, no, we got a shot. And everyone's like, no, you goddamn don't. Go get some prospects. And they went, no, we got a chance. You didn't. They didn't get anything for him. And now it's not only is he going to the Dodgers, it's that him going to the Dodgers just, I know you haven't been on Twitter very much. Everyone is basically saying the sport of baseball is dead. That's how bad it is, because they're like, all this deferred money. this is unacceptable. Baseball should be burned to the ground.
Rob Manfred is doing such a great job in that he's allowing the Dodgers to just do whatever they want fiscally. Just no rules on that front. And he has two of his teams playing in minor league ballparks for the foreseeable future. Not just 1 year, for many years. They're doing a great job, Rob. You nailed it, Rob. You're absolutely nailing it. By the way, it's the only sport that it's the commissioner of baseball, right? Major League Baseball commissioner. He's the commissioner of baseball, like he was ordained the title by God. And he is botching it considerably, and I fully expect another email from Major League Baseball, who loves to send me one about once a quarter, just going in on me, going in on Rob Manfred. And it's like, if you guys put the amount of effort that you take into listening or reading me and then sending me very tersely worded emails, if you put that amount of effort into helping your sport, imagine what you could do. Clearly, you think I have good ideas. You're spending a lot of time listening and reading.
Whenever I hear Manfred talk, it's like, you know how you have a certain dream before you get sick? For me, I get a weird dream where it's staticky, and then I wake up with like a fever.
Like a fever dream?
No, it's not. It's the pre-fever dream. Weird staticky thing. But the dream following that, where it's sort of surrealistic. It's just like Rob Manfred talking in this monotone voice where he's like, we're actually doing really well. And people are like, Rob, what are your ideas for the sport?
And he goes, they are doing really well. By the way, I'll give them credit. I love the pitch clock. I love the bigger bases. Working great. They did a nice job there. I mean, we can thank Theo Epstein for those, but like, he did a great job there. Rob Manfred, we're getting off topic, but ultimately he thinks they're doing great because they won the last CBA negotiations. That's why he thinks they're doing great. That's all he cares about. That's the only reason he was hired. And ultimately that kind of short-sightedness will kill the sport. Baseball's dead. Baseball been dead.
It's tough. But you know what? At least the San Francisco 49ers are theoretically alive, right?
Listen, this is going to turn into a Valkyries podcast. We made it very clear.
Sharks, too. If the Sharks could start playing on a different night, if they could stagger their schedule so it wasn't simultaneous with the Warriors, that would be incredible.
Break up here a little bit. They are a delight. They are a delight to watch. That was a hell of a game. 7 goals. They're cooking. They're cooking right now. Celebrini is a video game, baby.
Folks, that's where we're at in the 49er season, where we're talking about the CBA of Major League Baseball and talking Sharks. It's true, though.
When we switch Sicko into a teal color scheme, you know it's gone to hell. We just put on a hockey helmet instead.
But here, like, there is still plenty to talk about with this team. And even as it goes sideways, I think it gets more interesting
right.
in certain ways, because Rust. Even if they get these like crappy wins down the stretch and like hold on for dear life, I think it's negative for them, because I can't fathom them beating the Eagles or the Lions or really anyone. Ooh, now hey, we're talking.
Now we're cooking. We'll have full coverage, wall to wall.
Doing the DeVito.
The Valks. DeVito's not going to play on people. Thursday. It doesn't sound
That's devastating.
I know. I wasn't going to watch that game anyway.
Plenty of time. Joshua, buddy.
Shanahan does have plenty of time. He has two more years.
Oh, if you're talking about this season, no. If you're talking about fix this team going forward, absolutely. Sure.
I want to make sure that we're very, very clear. And he was actually talking about this year.
So that's
he's incorrect. Yeah. I want to make something very clear. You can't fix bad football players at the NFL level. This isn't college. They're not just, we just keep them in the system a little bit longer. We can develop them. They just need to get, these guys suck and they have sucked and they're going up against the best of the best. When your best of the best aren't the one guy who has upheld his end of the bargain this season, legitimately, is George Kittle. The one guy. Now, I'm not saying that the effort isn't there for guys, you know, the other great players, even Debo. I think the effort's there. But ultimately, they're not holding up their end of the they're not performing at the same level they were at last year, the years before that. And ultimately, what are you supposed to do? This team's special teams have sucked every week, right? Is that because they're poorly coordinated? Those are pretty simple plays. I've never once thought, like, wow, what terrible coordination. I have thought, wow, what terrible players.
Yeah. Go back to the last three drafts where you're drafting Drake Jackson, Ty Davis Price, Cam Latu, Ambry Thomas, Trey
Thomas
Sermon.
Thomas played for you.
True. But
so
like Trey Sermon.
Trey Sermon was starting games in 2021.
You
want to wonder why they were 3-5?
You missed on so many picks. Hey, listen, Joshua, you got nothing to apologize for. Being positive is good in this negative world.
You're all entitled. We're all entitled to our opinions. At the end of the day, we're all entitled to our opinions. Joshua, you keep doing you, baby.
I appreciate you. Did not mean to crush your spirit. Appreciate you.
Well, let's not lie here. We're not exactly spirit raisers.
I'm not trying to crush your spirit, but I will do it by nature of speaking what I believe, which is, I think, the reality that these boys are cooked. I don't know how you overcome the fact that this team, in order to be a good team or a great team, which is right, if you're going to compete and win all of these games down the stretch, be a great team. It's founded on running the ball effectively. When you're
stopping the run,
they're in the driver's seat, folks.
They're in the driver's seat.
Also, Henry with the literal driving emoji. Incredible.
It's intellectually dishonest, is what
their interior of the offensive line is getting mauled. They're getting mauled.
And you were mentioning the draft, Jake. Let's just go over their offensive line and defensive line drafts since 2021. Okay. So they have to bounce back from the 2020 season, right? So here's their offensive and their defensive lines. Jalen Moore and Aaron Banks in 2021. That's actually as good as they've ever done.
Correct. Even though you passed on Creed Humphrey for Aaron Banks. Banks has been a capable player for you. I think this might have been his worst. This might be his worst season.
Zekelj and Burford in 2022. Didn't draft anybody last year. Didn't draft two guys this past season. Pooney, who he's a rookie. It came through.
He's good.
He's good.
He's a good player.
You like Pooney. We all love the Poon. Not a great game. And then Jared Kingston, who they just cut. Which, fair.
By the way, he hadn't earned
a roster spot.
By the way, the other guy on the board at that time was Bo Limmer, who's the starting center for the Rams.
And so there's that. Let's go to the defensive line and how they've drafted the last 4 or 5 years, right? This is the foundation of your football team.
You could say on the offensive line, it's not been the worst drafting. It's just these are not, for the most part, foundational players that are elevating your team.
Correct. On a unit, which, by the way, they'll never spend money on. Right? They're fundamentally opposed.
Well, they're spending money on Trent, and
but
that's
they'll acquire. I mean, if it's Trent Williams, sure, but they're not going to take supposed marginal upgrades on the offensive line. They will spend money on the defensive line, as we've seen. They spend money hand over fist on the defensive line. A lot of good that's done them. Defensive line draft. Nobody this past season. What was it the year before? Oh, Robert Beal. How's that going? 2022, Drake Jackson, Kalia Davis. 2021, nobody. If you're wondering why they're spending all this money, it's because that's how they've drafted. They got Robert Beal, Drake Jackson, and Kalia Davis.
Before that, it was
Javon Kinlaw. 0-4-4. I'd like to think that this very highly paid defensive line coach would be able to identify some talent at the collegiate level that he can develop. Instead, you have to buy it, and you're usually buying it on the wrong side of when it's available. Now, they have done a nice enough job in finding guys just on the scrap heap, but you can only go dumpster diving so long. At a certain point, you got to put together an actual meal. If you go dumpster diving for Thanksgiving dinner, you're going to have a shitty Thanksgiving dinner.
And I do think fundamentally they have valued guys who can fire off the ball and get up field more than they have valued a traditional gap plugging, gap holding type of defensive tackle, which I understand how their scheme works. There are questions to be asked if that is the best way to go forward. I'm not saying you need everybody to just be a meatball standing there, holding double team, because you don't necessarily want that. But you could be damn sure you could use somebody on first and second down who's not getting mauled and can hold up occasionally against the double team.
Especially, too, when you know that you don't have the players to effectively run this, maybe you hedge a little bit. There is an ideological zealousness to this team that is very off-putting. And it's something that we have talked about for years now, the balance between ideology and scheme and the way Kyle and his coaches do things, the way that the league operates, and pragmatism. And ultimately, this was always going to come to a head in a very serious way. And Kyle doubled down on the way that they do things again this year. And they didn't have the players, and pragmatism came and kicked them in the nards. Because this is an offense that's built to beat cover three. It's a cover four league. This is a defense meant to split gaps and get into the backfield. This is a multiple blocking league these days. Very complex run game. A lot of gap stuff, if we're being frank. This is Kyle building systems that he wouldn't want to face. And ultimately, we've now reached a point where they've been doing the same thing for so long that everyone else figured out better ways of doing it. So I'm not saying they got to get rid of Kyle. I'm really not, because he is clearly smart enough to figure this out. But this is the thing he needs to figure out. I'm not saying he needs to shift everything week to week. That's impossible. They've taught it one way for the last 25 flipping years. They're not switching it on a dime. You wish that they could. You wish that they had that level of flexibility, the full Belichick role. We are nothing, therefore we can be anything. But that's not how that's going down.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the reality is, as this season continues to crater, and I think it will. I just fundamentally don't see a way it doesn't.
Right.
They are going to face questions this offseason about scheme and especially about personnel. And when I talk about personnel, I'm not just talking about players. I'm talking about coaching.
Totally.
I think they have reached a point where year over year, and I wrote the story. I talked to all the 49ers coaches last year And I credited Kyle Shanahan for I called it a superpower of replacing coaching talent year after year. They have lost 36 coaches. I believe 3 are NFL head coaches and 7 other ones are coordinators. Another 16 or 17 were promoted elsewhere. I do think they've reached a point where you lose Slowick and LaFleur and McDaniel and D'Amico and Sala and a bunch of other coaches, like one of the Kubiaks, Clint Kubiak, Joe Woods, random guys that you don't hear about, like Daryl Tapp, who's now the defensive line coach, was a huge part of the 49ers defensive line. You lose all those guys.
Assistant special teams coach, now the special teams coordinator for the Eagles.
Exactly. You lose all those guys, and I do think there's a point of they have a pipeline, but when guys get hired quicker than you were sort of expected or hoping for, you have to promote guys quicker, and you just don't have as much in your cupboards as you thought you did or as you would hope. And so you get into the situation where you promote Nick Sorensen, which took a while. If they were really sold on him immediately, I'm not so sure it would have taken that long. You remember it was like a protracted search and they were sort of nearing the end and then it lingered. They talked to Brandon Staley and they didn't really want to make him the coordinator. Now you have a situation where it will be interesting what comes out after the year on that, of how that dynamic has worked and what Staley has taken, and maybe they just promote Staley.
He's Anthony Lynn again, where they say he's doing so much behind the scenes, but no one can say what he's actually doing behind the scenes. And it's not because he's some mastermind. It's a lot of stuff. They want Ulbrich. They wanted Ulbrich last time. They're going to go back for Ulbrich again this time. And it might actually work out because he's a very good defensive coordinator. Sala ain't coming back. Ulbrich is about as good as you're going to get. You could do that'd be a win for them. And I do think, don't forget, I mean, Matt Barros had it in his mailbag today. It's something we've talked about a couple weeks back when Sala got fired. The Niners asked for Ulbrich specifically from the Jets this past offseason. That was Kyle's number one target. I can't have Robert Sala back. Who's Robert Sala's number two? Give me that guy. And the Jets said, you can't have him. He's our defensive coordinator. This is a lateral move. Nothing you can do. So what did they do? Who can we get inside? And who can we bolster him with? Again, Kyle, ideologue, pragmatist. I can't have what I want. Fine. Whatever. Just give me whatever's laying around here. Instead of being like, oh, now I got to dig down deep here and maybe go find somebody new. Maybe put myself outside of my comfort zone. Try something up. Go to the college ranks. What did Matt LaFleur do? Hey, Boston College head coach Jeff Hafley, how would you like to take a pay cut but not have to deal with NIL anymore? I'd love to. I would love to come play, be your defensive coordinator. What a concept. What an outside-the-box hire. What a move. Something that Kyle would never, under any circumstances, do because, by the way, that guy was on his staff. How do you think the connection's there? That was a guy who was his secondaries coach when he first showed up. Kyle Shanahan kept him on for a year. He has the relationship, and he couldn't even go get a guy like Jeff Hafley, who a couple of years ago was considered an option as an NFL head coach. Somebody who was getting interviews in that regard, or at least buzz. Not on it. You're going to fire your defensive coordinator at the end of the Super Bowl? I agree. But damn. Come on now. Super chat here. Amen report. Shout out to the super chats. Kyle wants his spags at DC. Go get Dennis Allen. Problem solved. Yeah, that's actually not that bad. I like that.
Pretty good. Peter agrees.
I do think they're going to go with Ulrich. I do think that that's where they want to go. I think that there's interest there. I feel like that was kind of a lover spurn situation. That's there. But shout out Super Chats. We'll definitely bring it up on the Super Chats. We'll also bring up the free ones. The water carriers are coming after Dieter. Uh-oh. I mean, I wouldn't know. I've been off Twitter for a month now, and the content has never flowed faster. Let's put it that way. On the last pod, you guys mentioned off-season tasks they have next year. Who's to say Kittle doesn't ask for an extension? He's one of the only players that's been playing up to his own standards. Oh, he's going to ask for an extension. And
he'll get one.
And yeah, they have no option but to get it. No, Jake, I was taking this comment so that your face would be completely blotted out.
Like that, folks?
Yeah, they have no choice. You know why? Because they haven't drafted a tight end since Braden Willis. And that's not working out. By the way, another bad game for Braden Willis. Bad special teams.
Yeah, play. No, you have to pick Kittle. He is your most valuable player on offense.
And then guess what happens? At some point, maybe it's next year, maybe it's 3 years from now, it all goes off. And then we're having the same conversation, but at least he'll talk to the media.
But you didn't, you haven't drafted a single capable tight end since you drafted George Kittle. But you drafted Cam Latu in the third round, which I will continually and never forgive them for.
As well you should. Purdy will go on IR eventually. That's a Jake Hutchinson prediction as well. You can see the writing on the wall. Well, maybe that was in private conversation.
I feel like we talked about that as a possibility. And that's something where if this goes sideways and you're Purdy and you're waiting for a $60 million contract, it doesn't really benefit you. And it doesn't benefit the 49ers to say, all right, you've had a serious elbow injury and now you got a shoulder injury. Just play through it. I don't know.
I do one Burnman coming in saying, I think it's the elbow. I've heard nothing regarding the elbow. I don't think it's the elbow at all. I think that he's got something going on inside the shoulder. I couldn't tell you what the hell that is because I've got a bad shoulder and like there's a lot of muscles in there. Like that shit's complicated. But the more he throws, the more it hurts. Doesn't seem ideal. And this is a guy who will fundamentally try to gut it out.
Also, you're going into a game that's going to be freezing.
Oh.
Of all games to have to gut it out, it just seems fundamentally dangerous to say go out there. He's going to have to scramble a lot. It's going to be a mess.
I don't know. Yeah. Man.
Just run the wing T with Josh Dobbs.
Hey, they refuse to because they had the opportunity to run the wing T. NFC Championship game, 2020, refused to run it. So, Jake, you're on 2-6 tomorrow?
I am on 2-6 tomorrow, folks.
We got another super on.
Apologies. Oh, my God.
If Clint Kubiak is let go in NO, he should be Kyle's OC. Option B, promoting Clay or Greasy to OC. Kyle needs an OC, period. Kyle will never relinquish play calling responsibilities, but he definitely needs more effective help around him on the offensive side.
Pass game coordinator, bring that back. I think they use Chris Foerster.
The Iman report, apologies.
Iman report. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
I do think, they've had Chris Foerster as their run game coordinator. It's something where I think there are three coaches on offense that have been around for a little bit of a while and that the 49ers or Kyle sort of trusts. It's Foerster, who's the only one left, I think, that's been with him since Washington. And then there is Brian Fleury, who's a tight ends coach, who I think is a pretty sharp guy. Gets asked a lot in some off-season projects. I think he's trusted. And Clay Kubiak, who is, he's the assistant quarterbacks coach and works with the offense. And I think Kyle trusts those guys. But I do think there is a lack of – there's a lot being asked of Foerster, and I think there could be some help in bringing Clint Kubiak back. I don't think that's a bad idea whatsoever if that's available because clearly the offense looked more functional last year.
I mean, Mick Lombardi is on the staff now. You got Deuce Schwartz, MIZ.
You got a lot of young guys that's cool.
That's cool, but is Kyle going to listen to those guys? I like Leonard Hankerson. I think he's a pretty good coach. Are they going to listen to him? Is Kyle going to say, hey, yeah, let's lean on those guys? He runs it kind of like the mafia. Now, and this is not to imply that there's some malfeasance going on, but he very much values loyalty, right? And that's not surprising when you come from and you enter the league the way that he entered it. His daddy got him the job. Full stop. It's not to say he wasn't qualified or that he was good, but his daddy got him a job with the Buccaneers. And his daddy was his number one recommender throughout. And his dad should be a Hall of Famer. Like, his dad has 2 Super Bowl rings. His dad's one of the greats. And so the idea that Kyle wouldn't value loyalty is insane.
Yeah. I want to, before we close out here, where they bring back Greenlaw next year, I think that's very likely. I think Greenlaw will probably play a few games at the end of this season, whether it's in the cards or not, probably because he wants to play.
Yeah.
And he's just been itching to get out there. I remember I was at a practice and he was throwing the ball around with Fred Warner and he jumped up and caught it. And Fred's like, no, 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 no. don't do that. Don't do that. Chill out. Sir, like he's itching to get out there, right?
I get it. He loves football.
And I think they will need to, because Lord knows whatever production he could offer, I think it's even beyond that. It's just his energy is a legitimate factor. The only guy that's brought anything close to that is Malik Mustafa, and there's been nobody else. I guess Diamondor Lenore too. But yeah, they will, I think, be able to bring him back. Now, coming off an
Achilles, he's not going to be too expensive. He'll stick around. It will be half of his current deal. He's getting paid about $8 million right now. He'll get like four, maybe five. There will be a bunch of incentives on it.
Campbell got, I think, four and a half, five from the Niners. So
1 year,
give it to Greenlaw next year.
A make good, no problem. I have no problem with that. Because at a certain point, you know, we joke about the fact that they're in such a bind with all of these players who have sort of aged out, right? They're at the back end. But like, you do need competent football players at some point. It's not to imply that, you know, Christian McCaffrey or Debo Samuel isn't competence might be a stretch at this point, but like, because he just isn't performing at all. But ultimately, you do need NFL caliber players. Those guys are NFL caliber players. They're just
knows your scheme, is valued by your other linebacker, trusted. You know,
there's no harm in bringing him back. I do not think.
And it's always year two
that he's going to get overpaid, much less to $15 million. You have to have a market. Who the fuck is going to pay Dre Greenlaw $15 million coming off an Achilles tear?
I'm with you.
And we're going to end with that.
I know.
Debo playing in Dallas in 2025. I would say there's no way that anyone would possibly trade for Debo Samuel. I stand corrected. I know one man who might trade for Debo Samuel. His name, Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Everyone, thank you so much. Loving what we're doing with the live streams. Let's keep it going on Friday night.
Genuinely appreciate all you folks. Massively appreciate it. You can catch me tomorrow, 2 to 6 or 1:45 to 6 on 95.7. We got the crossover that starts at 1:45, so catch me there. And appreciate you all.
And you can also catch me at 2 to 6 on KNBR tomorrow. Which 49er will I force to respond on their podcast? You don't know. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll talk to you on Friday, where I'm sure we'll just have, you know, so many really, really positive things to say. Adios.